The loss of a spouse has fueled nonfiction works like Joan Didion's The Year of Magical Thinking or Joyce Carol Oates' A Widow's Story. Now, poet Gail Mazur has a new collection of poems which she says acknowledges there's going to be a loss. And there is. Her husband, the artist Michael Mazur, died in August of 2009. Here she places both of them in a painting in the collection's title poem, Figures in a Landscape.
We were two figures in a landscape in the middle distance in summer. In the foreground, twisty olive trees. A mild wind made the little dry leaves tremble. Then, of course, the horizon, the radiant blue sky. The maker was hungry for light. Light silvered the leaves, a stream. I like to think, for your sake, the scene was Italian, 17th century.
Poet Gail Mazur reading a portion of her poem, Figures in a Landscape. It does tell much of their story, their wedding day, but also her migraines, her riff on Amazon's alphabetizing, the time her parents went to Edna St. Vincent Millay's funeral and left her home. Oh, wait, that was a dream. Gail Mazur is a distinguished writer in residence at Emerson College here in Boston and joins us in the studio to talk about her latest collection. Welcome.
Thank you, Robin.
And an opportunity to say so sorry about the death of Michael Mazur, just a wonderful artist. His work shown here at the Museum of Fine Arts. He illustrated poet Robert Pinsky's Dante. He was a big, handsome guy.
Yeah, he was a force. Thank you.
He was a force. And, you know, you wrote these poems while he was dying. Was there one thing that you could say that dying propelled through your pen?
I think there was must have been a way in which both of us are trying to keep the beautiful part of our life alive. And to do that, I had to sort of pull back and have a view as if from somewhere else. It wasn't deliberate, but I realized it afterwards that the poems, many of them, were written as if I were looking at us both at certain stages of our life. The title poem is probably, in a way, and was written the closest to his death of all these poems, but it contains a lot of the things I'd thought about over and over again, sort of obsessively, particularly for an artist and a writer, the need to be alone and the absolute, utter need to have love.
You write about that. Can you just read some of the closing lines from that poem?
I wanted to walk by myself a while, but I'd always been afraid to lose you, and the naked olive groves were hovering as if to surround you. That was the problem. I craved loneliness. I needed the warmth of love. If no one looks at us, do we or don't we disappear? The landscape would survive without us. When you're in it, it's not landscape any more than the horizon's a line you can stand on.
Yeah.
Michael was a great burbling personality, incredibly productive and incredibly intellectually alive and talking all the time, so that sometimes at 11:45 at night I would have to say, that's all. That's all, Mike. I never thought, I don't want to live with this man anymore. But I really was desperate often just to be alone in my head. I mean, sometimes I would wake up in the morning and I'd have to say, don't talk. Yeah. You know, because I'd wake up with an idea, and if I didn't get it in my journal right away, I was going to lose it, and I was going to be thinking about Van Gogh in a minute.
Well, you know? Because he was. Well, right. I think a lot of people who've been together with someone a long time can identify with that.
It has to be universal. I mean, even my mother used to say this cliche because he worked at home. Marry him for breakfast and dinner, but not for lunch.
And yet, you write that unlike the other women in your family, unlike your mother, you did seize on things that they didn't. I'm referring to the poem, To the Women of My Family. Can we look at that for a second?
Sure. That was a poem that for some reason I also couldn't have written before this year. I mean, somebody said I was writing at the end of my nerves, and it was as if it was the most uninhibited writing, even though some of it was formal and some of it was loose.
That's funny. I was going to ask you about that because in the description of your wedding, you know, here you are 20 years old and you write about your father looking stunned. Your mother-in-law, gowned in scarlet lace décolletage, loathes us all and won't stop smiling.
Right.
I thought, well, a little bit of a release there. But in the writing to the women of your own family, you had something that they didn't.
Right.
Read just the first few lines up to a discovery when you're very young.
Fierce, frightened, fragmented, my women. For the flower of hope for years, I meant to apologize that it bloomed in me without nourishment. Or nourishment was the silvered mirage in the mirror greeting me one morning when I was young, fascinating and foreign. Hope.
Recognizing, wow, I have a look in my face they don't have.
Yeah.
So you had it before you married your husband, or maybe that's why you chose an
optimist.
I think
it was, but I had only... My boyfriends had always been outliers, jazz musicians, and I think I was sort of attracted to the then boys that I wanted to be.
Well, and you also in the poem to the women apologize to them. A lot of women get to a certain age and it's sort of like a lightning bolt hitting you like, oh, now I understand why my mother was this way.
And that they lived in a different history from what I lived in, and that it took enormous courage for them to do what they did.
How does, you know, given that this is, as you said, these are poems that you wrote as your husband was dying, there's some ways all shaped by that. How does Dear Migraine fit in? An ode to your migraines.
Well, I have a couple of odes in the book that are just angry odes. I think Dear Migraine, I think the way it fits in is that when I knew that we were going to lose the life that we had together, the migraines were more infuriating. And at the same time, less important, both the pain of what was going to happen and the experience of living with somebody who's, you know, really getting sicker. Mm. Who needs migraines?
Right.
You know?
Right, right. As you write, the shadow lurking in me, the lunatic light waiting in the shadow, ghost rider of my half-life, intention's ambush. I mean, that's what a migraine is. It's an ambush.
Yeah, it's an ambush. I mean, you're about to do something good, and there it is.
Yeah.
You're not. I didn't read Joan Didion's book while Mike was alive. A friend said, don't read it. The life is too much like yours, two people who work together in the same space all the time. And so I didn't, and I read it recently, and it's a wonderful book, parts of which I recognize completely, but it took me a long time to realize my version of magical thinking after Mike died, because I was so geared, you know, to be realistic and to accept what was going to happen.
And what is your version?
Not throwing out the work shoes. And it's because I can't quite believe that they're not going to be used again by him. And I have a special situation in that I'm surrounded by the art that he made, which is very alive, you know, and very joyful for me. It's never sad.
And so he's there very much.
Yes, I'm surrounded by him as I always was.
That's Gail Mazur. Her collection of poetry is Figures in a Landscape. Gail, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin. It's a pleasure.